Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. We're going to discuss traditional values, the push for trans, rampant pedophilia, and much more. My guest is Kim Coulter, who's a wife, a mother, and a strong advocate for American traditional values. She's a graphic designer, videographer, and director of digital content for National File, great outlet. She's also the producer of The Campaign Show with Petra Cowley. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to get this going.
Yeah. And thanks to the guy on X who brought us together, because I'm surprised that you weren't on my radar. I think I'd seen some of your stuff here and there, but then when someone connected us, I was like, yeah, this is a great idea. And of course, we have to discuss your relation to Ann Coulter. You have the same last name. So what is the relation there?
Well, I was actually adopted into the Coulter family, but she is my aunt and my godmother.
Oh, cool. Awesome. Yeah. Now, what's that like being adopted? Did you go through some kind of identity struggles? I have some friends that are adopted, but they did DNA tests, you know, to find, you know, some of their ethnic heritage and all that. Did you do any of that?
I did, but my adoption story is also kind of unique in that I had a private adoption. So I knew, first of all, I knew my entire life that I was adopted, but I also knew that when I turned 18, I would have the option to find my biological mother. And I have found her, and she's wonderful. And I'm so, so lucky in that regard, because a lot of adopted kids don't get that kind of, resolve in their life, but I was very fortunate in that I got to do that.
Oh, that's really cool. So then you can ask her all the questions and family history and about your father and all that. Oh, that's great. That's awesome.
What's even wilder is that I was in the same elementary school a grade below my biological brother.
What?
For a bunch of years, and we just had no idea. So that it's just like life is just so funny.
Oh,
like that.
Wow. Yeah, that is interesting, too, how, like, DNA family is, like, drawn together. I've heard stories about that, too, of people coming together and they were friends and they didn't know that they were related. You know, scarier when they maybe marry them and realize, like, oh, shoot.
That's when it gets a little dark. It takes some dark turns.
Now, you said that you were often bullied into not liking Anne growing up. Tell us about that.
Well, I would say that when I was younger, you would have been able to describe me as fairly right wing in my ideology. But the more I kind of shared this, and I would, you know, brag about Anne, you know, I would see people reading her book and I would run up to them and be like, that's my aunt. And, you know, eventually, you know, I lived in New York, so very blue state. And I went to private schools predominantly, you know, like very wealthy Democrats, both in the student body as far as like parents and in the, you know, the teachers were all left wing. This was actually the school where I discovered a tortured Ann Coulter doll in the desk. That was like a crazy moment for me. But I would get, you know, sentiments all the time that were just along the lines of, oh, well, you know, you're not a horrible person. There's no way you believe what she believes, because her beliefs make her a bad person. So you don't want to be a bad person. And eventually, you know, you get that beat enough into you. And in a position where I was in, where I just wanted to be accepted, you know, I already kind of had the identity crisis that you touched on a little bit about, like, you know, I don't belong to the family I'm in. I feel like the black sheep of the family. Mm-hmm. So I'm trying to find these groups, and I'm constantly being given this, like, well, if you believe this, then you must be bad. And it's like, all right, I surrender.
So that kind of influenced you to accepting probably some bits of liberalism then, right?
Because you wanted to fit in. It's a toxic spiral, because ultimately I didn't actually pay attention to the, you know, real details of what was going on around me. I was just kind of like fed the ideology, and it was like, all right, well, this is what you believe. And it's like, all right, this is, you know, I'm going to go up and I'm going to take a stand. And of course, I am very serious about this thing that I know little about.
Yeah. And it's always super bad in those, like, you know, wealthier private schools and stuff. There are always these, you know, stuck up liberals that think that they know everything. And it's like, you live in a bubble. Like, your feet barely touch the ground.
Right.
What was it like growing up in New York? People always think, oh, New York's so amazing. I've been there a few times, and I just don't see it. I think it's overrated.
If New York was ever good, it was in the like 90s and early 2000s.
Or the 40s, the 1940s.
I mean, I meant more just like in recent times.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
Even then, you know, I go back and forth on this all the time because I am who I am because of how I grew up. So I owe a lot to being a New Yorker, and I still have that little bit of, you know,
East Coast.
For that. But I mean, it was hell. I got away with so much because it was easy to get away with stuff. I started, like, you know, smoking weed and skipping class and doing all sorts of degenerate stuff, like, really early on. I think I was, you know, like 13 years old when I smoked my first joint or something. And I, you know, God bless my parents, they did a lot, but they were not strict. And I was able to get away with so much. I don't think I ever got caught sneaking out. I don't think I ever once they discovered grounding, I got grounded a lot, but that didn't really prevent a whole lot. I still just kind of did whatever I wanted to do. And that kind of lifestyle leads down bad roads very quickly.
Yeah.
And which ended up with me being 19 years old, looking like a 14-year-old boy weighing 87 pounds.
Oh, jeez. You
know? Yeah, it was just, it was not good. And thank the Lord, I got my life together and eventually figured out sort of what I wanted to do and how I wanted to live and how that was not part of the plan for me whatsoever. But I did learn a lot from it at the very least. So when you say, like, well, how is it growing up in New York? it was a trial by fire. I grew up really quickly. I learned a lot of really hard life lessons really early. And a lot of that is just the choices I made. And who knows if I would have made those choices in the suburbs versus living in the city. But the accessibility of bad choices was definitely more prevalent in the city.
Yeah, and you're exposed to a lot more, too. So there's things that you learn as opposed to growing up in the countryside. You might never see, you know, certain freaks or have access to drugs or things like that.
You know, I was part of the guinea pig generation as far as social media is concerned. Mm-hmm. So, like, a lot of the degenerate stuff I was exposed to was just on the internet.
Yeah, and you learn about it there. Yeah, see, I didn't grow up with that. Thank God. Like, I'm so glad I don't have a Facebook from when I'm 16 years old doing dumb stuff.
Oh,
I mean, because we all rebel. We all do, well, a lot of us rebel and do dumb stuff. And hopefully, eventually, you get your head screwed on straight and you outgrow that. But some people, they just don't. And it seems like in this day and age, they really don't outgrow it. It's just like it just continues. Yeah. Like your, you know, outbursts and your mentality as a teenager, you're supposed to outgrow those things. Yeah, you're going to smoke pot or try, you know, dumb things or do dumb things, but eventually, hopefully, you outgrow that.
Right.
So now tell us your background leading up to, well, journalism and working to the National File. What was your trajectory? How you got
well,
there?
I wanted to be in graphic arts. I was studying videography. And I mean, I still do all of these things, but I took an interview with WME. I was trying to maybe get like a mailroom job at one of these like agencies to eventually work my way up into a higher up position. And I just kept not getting the job. And I honestly think that was a bit of an intervention from God, because I didn't have any business staying anywhere near New York or doing anything like that. As I wanted to be with my husband and, like, you know, find our life together. So that was a blessing in disguise. But honestly, at the time, I was just trying to figure stuff out after having been rejected from a lot of these really big places that I thought I was kind of a shoo-in for. And I was working as a barista, and I had worked at Starbucks for a bunch of years, and then I moved.
That's okay. That's all right. We all have to work somewhere.
Well, I mean, I'm not like ashamed of that. That was what I did, and it was miserable. Oh my gosh, working at Starbucks is the worst freaking job. But that's a whole other thing. But anyway, I moved from there to like a smaller family type coffee shop, and it was super cute, super comfortable. I learned it really quick compared to the, you know, dumpster fire that is Starbucks. And I was getting along there really well. And I was actually already kind of starting to help train people. And I was staying extra hours and doing all sorts of stuff. And it was in Connecticut. And the subject of Sandy Hook was very much on everybody's somebody was saying something about how Alex Jones deserved to be dragged into the streets and murdered. And I was just really not okay with it. You know, at that time, Ann and I had reconnected right before I had moved back. So I had been introduced to a lot of conservative commentators. I had befriended Lucian Wintrich because he was on the show Problematic with her when they were in California. Anyway, so I had met a bunch of people who are in this industry. and who are just like very genuinely nice people who really are just, you know, not anything that they're portrayed as. And I'm listening to this person who's like angry about an incident with gun violence say that they want someone dragged into the street and shot dead. And I'm just, you know, I didn't blow my head off at them or anything. I didn't go crazy, but I was just like, that is extremely messed up.
Yeah.
Didn't say anything like that about anybody, but there's no way that you're going to tell me that you think a tragedy justifies a tragedy. And I also, you know, I had been in my red pill journey, so to speak, and I was learning a lot about Alex Jones, and it was very clear to me that he was not guilty of all this stuff that people were saying he was guilty of. And I was just very adamant about it. You know, I was eager to drop the subject, but I just pushed it. I was just like, we're just not going to talk about like that about people. I'm not comfortable with it. It's crazy.
You put your foot down. You said, I'm uncomfortable. Yeah. I don't agree with you. And
not on the schedule. The next day I was taken off the schedule. No call, no nothing.
Tolerance and anti-violence, huh?
Yeah, for real. They just said, we just don't feel like you're going to be a good fit, whatever that means. And, from there, I had already kind of been going on Periscopes with people. I was kind of starting to say stuff on Twitter, dipping my toe in the water, so to speak. And finally, it was actually Tim Pool who reached out to me. He had heard my story through a friend and had me on before he got really big. It was like a one-on-one episode. And I had befriended Laura Loomer at that point through other friends, and she hooked me up with the people at National File, and because she knew I didn't have anywhere to freaking go. I didn't know what I was going to do. I didn't have a plan. I had worked with a cannabis magazine once upon a time, and she was like, well, you can write, you're not a moron, so let's see if you are any good at news copy. And the National File really took me under their wing and taught me everything. And I've, you know, really since grown as a journalist and as a reporter, and it's like, you know, all thanks to these guys.
Yeah, you're doing great. Yeah, I can't tell that you didn't have any background. I think those are probably the best journalists, honestly, the ones that didn't go get programmed in, you know, so-called journalism school, lefty indoctrination centers. Now, how is it in California? Because I've lived in L.A. too. I don't know where you are in California, but California versus New York, it's so different. Because in California, they'll smile to your face, tell you what you want to hear. Yeah, whereas New York, that's one thing you appreciate. They're sharpshooters, and they're more honest. They're kind of rude and rough, but it's not the case in L.A., right? Everyone's smooth, snake tongue.
I mean, I lived in the Inland Empire for a while, moved to the Bay Area, lived in San Francisco and Daly City, and did a lot of traveling for work. I was working with a cannabis company at the time. And it's horrible. I mean, I don't think I've ever been so depressed in my entire life. And I was so unwilling to admit it because I had spent so much of my time saying, I'm going to get to California and I'm going to make it. And I'm going to, you know, make money.
Overrated.
It was so overrated, so overrated, and so depressing and so awful. I never wanted to leave my house. And like, especially when I lived in the Bay Area, I lived, my first apartment that I actually wanted to live in burned down. And literally a week to the day after I moved in, it burned down, and they put me in this other apartment that's famously in San Francisco known as Tranny Hooker Corner.
Oh, isn't that everywhere now in San Francisco?
Yeah, but this was like where you go to get your tranny prostitute. Okay. There's like the, you know, the pay by the hour hotels.
Oh my God.
All that kind of stuff. And like, to their credit, they actually kept an eye out for me when I was, you know, if I would be out by myself. There was my favorite incident. A guy tried to come up to me and say something, and this one tranny like took off her like, you know, 8-inch heels and went, "You got no business with that white woman," like chased him down the street.
So and, a large black man in heels. That's what you're saying.
Yeah, exactly. I'm forever going to be grateful for that, at least that kind of thing. the culture that comes with it was not worth it.
It's so sad. I mean, my parents grew up in San Francisco in the 50s, and they tell me stories of, you know, walking around in the avenues, and they knew the cops and they knew everyone there. And it was beautiful and wonderful.
Now they tell you to not even carry your cell phone because it'll get stolen if someone sees it. You know, it's just insane.
Going to be time to move. I mean, there's places, nicer places in California, more north. But I mean, you're getting hit with the state politics, though. That's the problem. You know, yeah, it's still going to affect you.
I mean, that's what's broken in California. Just like, you know, they have so many, they have laws that like are in favor of like actual pedophiles.
Yeah.
They'll use state tax money to fund transgender surgeries and for people in prison and all sorts of insane stuff.
Well, now that we're on that topic, let's talk about trannies, because you had a report that you did on transgenders in women's prisons. Now, what did you discover?
Well, I actually had a friend who was at a maximum facility in California, and she was telling me about this. You know, I wish I could remember the transgender inmate's name. That it was just a while ago, so that I'm having trouble recalling that. But she was talking about how this dude was suddenly, this is like a lifer inmate. This is somebody who is never going to see the light of day outside of prison walls ever again. And this man decided, oh, I'm a woman and you need to pay for my surgery and I need to be moved to the women's facility. And that's exactly what happened. The taxpayer money paid for this dude to resemble what they think a woman is. And they moved him into the women's facility. And guess what? He's attacking people on the regular and very like sexually violent, not just like, you know, assault wise. And one of the big threats that he would say is that, you know, oh, my buddies up in, you know, the big house up in Max facility for men, they're going to do this too. And we're going to run this prison.
So,
and like, that was a while ago. Like, that's happening all over the country now.
Yes, of course. And I heard from an insider too, that some men, straight men are, you know, requesting hormones, saying that they want to transition, trying to pretend that they're trans just so that they can get into the female prisons. Yeah.
Yeah,
so it'll be easier. Yeah, it'll be easier for them. And then they have access to women that they can rape or whatever, you know?
Yeah. And I really, it blows my mind that people are so close-minded to this, because we're supposed to be so pro-woman and pro-women's safety and hashtag me too. And nobody gives a shit if it's a trans man that's attacking a woman, because that's a woman too. And you need to respect them. It's like, well, no, like, why would I respect a rapist? Why would I respect a male rapist?
If he has a penis, it's not a woman, okay? Yes.
Yeah, exactly. You know, like, we'll never be a woman.
No. And in California, they're paying for gender reassignment surgery of inmates, as you covered too. That's insane. Paying for sex change operations.
Yeah. So basically these dudes who are murderers and rapists and people who will, you know, like, they're lifelong inmates are just saying, F it, I'll just be a woman and I'll be able to have access to all the vulnerable people that I could ever want. And it's despicable.
Yeah, and then they don't have to worry about getting bonked up the rear, I guess, in the men's prison.
Yeah, well, I mean, until all of the women are just like trans dudes.
Yeah, and then- exactly. That's right. That's right. Now, why do you think transsexuality is being pushed so damn hard today? It's just insane.
Well, I mean, it's psychological warfare. I think that's pretty obvious. The way that they integrate it into pop culture, the way that they force feed it to you through commie daycare, as I like to call the public school system, the way that they put it into every single facet and every single place that you will ever encounter, and the way that it's pervasive on the internet and in social media, it's a direct attack, especially when you think about the fact that upwards of 80% of transgendered people are autistic. Like, these are mentally ill people that are being taken advantage of. And while it's funny to laugh at, like, oh, haha, the tranny, like, no, these are mentally ill people who are suffering. And instead of being offered legitimate help, which, actual therapy, actual psychotherapy will more often than not assist in helping, they're being cheered on into their suicide. They're being cheered on into the destruction of their family line. And I think, I mean, that's part of it too, is like directly attacking people because of, you know, carrying on, it's primarily affecting a lot of young white women are being
tricked. Oh yeah.
It's very prevalent. I don't know a single transgendered person, and I've met a lot. I lived on Tranny Hooker Corner. Okay. I used to go to RuPaul's Drag Con. I lived it. I don't like to talk about it, 'cause it's not a lifestyle I want to ever re-experience.
Yeah.
But the fact of the matter is these people are sick. These people are suffering.
Yeah, they're mentally ill. When you meet them and when you go to some of these tranny hangs and you talk to a few of them, obviously they're
all of them are victims of like former pedophiles.
That's
too,
right. Pedophile. That's why they've become drug addicts. They have high suicide rates, you know, and then they go on to be abusers themselves. Right.
Exactly. In a lot of cases, unfortunately, that becomes the pattern. Like abused people often become abusers. And I said, I wish people would take this as a mental health crisis because that's exactly what it is. It's an act of psychological warfare, and it is fundamentally targeting mentally ill people.
Yep. And with that, we see pedophilia is rampant today. I mean, it's always been there, but now it seems like it's. They're getting close to trying to make it like, oh, it's just another sexual orientation, right? It's just their preference, right? We've heard all the terms.
Love has no age stuff is like really starting to be a prevalent talking point.
Yeah, and that's what a lot of people warned about with the LGBTQ, you know, all that, the slippery slope, you know, they get loud enough, they get enough power, eventually it's going to go into pedophilia, right? And we see that it is rampant today. I mean, where's this heading? Where does it end? You just let the pedophiles do whatever they want and abuse kids?
Well, I mean, you know, even Joe Biden molested his own daughter. You know?
Yeah. Like, that's just it.
You know, that's a story that nobody talks about. Like the Biden diary is like a legitimate thing published by National File.
That's right. I remember that.
And nobody wanted to touch it. Nobody wanted to say anything about it. James O'Keefe was even like, oh, I don't know if it's legitimate. Sure. but like, you know, we talk about pedophilia being rampant. It's literally in the White House. Mm-hmm. You know, this guy is unashamed about sniffing children. And the other day there was a quote from Joe Biden that was like, you know, I really like children more than I like adults. Like, really, Joe? I couldn't tell.
Yeah, I think it's always been there, kind of like Eyes Wide Shut style, you know, amongst the elites, right? It's like once they have so much power and they have access to everything and they can buy all kinds of hookers and things, it's like they just need something harder and more aggressive and more messed up. And then it's like, here we are.
The drag time story hour people are the ones too that are normalizing this pedophilia. When you have like the performers that are like doing sexy dances in front of children and teaching them how to feed them dollar bills into their underwear.
That's right. They're sexualizing them. And then a lot of these kids, is that what I am? You know, you have young children. Children don't know. Like you're asking them questions at 3 and 4. What do you identify as? Like they'll say a tomato.
My daughter would tell you that she's a dinosaur. I promise you.
And then that's what's so evil about it. They take these precious little innocent minds and they're planting these like demonic seeds in there of like, ooh, you might be this or you might be that, just trying to poison them right away. Why? Because they ultimately want to abuse them. Ultimately, they want more trannies on board. They want more of them because they can't make babies on their own. So it's like they need to win more people over, you know, and then the establishment is like, yeah, this is great because it's ultimately a war, I think, on family values. Destroying the family units, destroying, you know, trying to destroy, you know, traditional European Western civilization, all the things that are sacred to us. And then eventually it can lead into transhumanism, which, you know, plays into their control and depopulation agenda, right? But let's talk about this whole Pizzagate now that we're on the pedophiles thing, because it was John Podesta's friend who debunked Pizzagate, arrested for child porn, right? This guy, you've seen him. And are we surprised? I mean, are we surprised? The guy that was like the hardest, loudest against, like, no, it's all just a conspiracy. It's not really happening. Turns out is watching disgusting porn. I can't even fathom like a toddler's being raped. Right. I mean, this is the sickest of the sickest. I mean, he should be, tortured in the town square.
Yeah. I mean, like, you know, bring back the millstones, but like these, you know, no, it's not shocking at all that the people who most adamantly deny the existence of these groups of people who buy and sell children and, you know, make videos and do all sorts of horrible things to kids are the ones who are themselves, you know, acting out these fantasies.
Don't look at me because I've got skeletons in my closet. Let's go point at those evil right wingers over there, those anti-Semitic conspiracy theorists, you know.
Well, yeah, I mean, everybody's an anti-Semit these days, right? Like, you can't breathe without being called anti-Semitic at this point.
It's like you just can't make it up. And there was another journalist, too, who is also railing against Pizzagate. He also was arrested for child porn. But I saw that you got into a little thing with Benjamin Goggin. I don't even know who this guy is, but I guess he's at, is he at MSNBC? Let me pull it up.
I believe so.
MSNBC, and it, like, part of what's in his Twitter handle is child safety. What, child safety online or something like that? Anyway, he said, oh, well, he wasn't actually raping the toddlers. He was just watching videos of toddlers being raped. So that makes it better, right? I mean, there's absolutely no defense for this. And if you're defending it, you're one of them. That's the only conclusion I can come to. And because of that, you had a little run-in with this guy too, right?
Because his whole thing was like, you know, I'm not defending it. I'm just saying you should be an ethical journalist while defending a pedophile. You can't make this stuff up. And like I don't think I'd ever heard of him before. I kind of just stumbled onto a screenshot of this and wanted to see, because, you know, you can make up screenshots. I like to verify these things before I express outrage. And it was just one of those, like, of course this is a real guy, and of course this is a real tweet, and of course this is him really saying, like, well, at least he wasn't doing it himself.
Well, some kids are being abused. They're in the video.
Yeah, not only that, but we also know from the affidavit that he likes to refer to that this guy was coordinating meeting with these kids and was talking about how he was having fantasies of doing something that I won't say with another grown man to a child. So, like, this idea, oh, well, he didn't do it. He was gonna.
Yeah, and actually there is one video I was reading that he did film where he was trying to get this kid to do stuff. So it's utterly inexcusable and there's no words for it. It's just
I didn't know what ignorance is bliss meant until I started learning about this stuff.
It just gets uglier and uglier, you know. And then what's annoying is he might just, like, flee to Israel or something, because there's been cases of this. They flee to Israel, they get taken in, you know, because he's a dual citizen. But yeah, this Ben Goggin was, oh yeah, here was the other guy. The other ABC News. And they really look like trustworthy, clean-cut family guys.
Isn't that the actor who, like, fled to Israel?
This is James Gordon Meek. He was a national security journalist at ABC, and he was another.
I was just looking. I couldn't. I don't have my glasses on, so I couldn't read that. But he looked like Tom Hanks or whatever the guy.
Well, a lot of those actors are suspects. Yeah. Okay. So Ben Goggin, I'm looking at his Twitter handle, deputy tech director at NBC News, online investigations, internet culture, extremism, child safety. And that's the guy who's like, oh, relax. He wasn't really raping kids. He was just watching videos of it.
Highly suspect.
And then there was recently, I saw you had retweeted, Democrat Mayor Wojohn was given 30 years for his involvement in child porn. It's amazing how many lefties, huh? How many lefties are getting caught for this. I'm not saying there's no people on the right, obviously.
Say, like, unfortunately, like, a few have come to light even very recently. But yeah, they do seem to disproportionately be lefties.
And they always look like it too. Like, you can spot it. And they're always the ones with the love is love and all the rainbows. And you
my husband always says, if it looks like a duck and it walks like a duck, it's probably a child predator.
Yeah. I mean, use your gut instincts, your feelings. This is when you do have to discriminate. We've been taught, don't discriminate. You know, it's like, no, that's what can get you killed or your child stolen and raped.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, speaking of Israel, what are some of your thoughts on this whole Israel-Gaza war? It's really blurring the lines of left and right. We're seeing how these supposed, you know, Ben Shapiro says, oh, no, those are just lefty Jews, you know, in the past who were like anti-Zionist. They're hardcore. We're seeing that they are hardcore Zionists. And then we have people, the neocon right and some Christians that are really supporting Israel first policies. And then, of course, there's people, all of us who don't, we're not like anti-war, stay out of it, not our problem. What are your thoughts?
Well, I'm very much on the stay the hell out of it side. I'm an America first person. And that means that I already thought we shouldn't have been spending money on Israel. We send them too much money in the first place and they have way too much influence on us. It doesn't make any sense. You know, I don't feel the need to pick a side because they're both inherently and provably ideologically so different from me and against all these principles that I hold true that I don't feel obligated to like pick a side. They're both unethical and they both shouldn't have to be involved in that. You know what I mean? Yeah. We shouldn't be sending a single dollar over there. There's, you know, while there's potholes on my street, I don't really feel like funding people in other countries. I'm sorry.
There's homeless drug addicts on your street. Well, there's mentally ill trans. I know you've moved, but yes. Yeah.
Exactly. There's homeless. There's American. I mean, even in New York, like the migrant crisis in New York is insane.
Out of control. Yeah.
Placing people who are, you know, legitimately hurting, legitimately in trouble, who we should be looking out for first. And a lot of those, you know, a lot of those are, you know, mentally ill drug addicts, but you also have your veterans, you have, you know, older people who don't necessarily have family. They're, you know, these problems, there's so many problems in our own country and there's such a problem of poverty in our own country. So why are we, you know, spending, you know, 10 times over what we could to like fix our border in the Ukraine? Why are we sending all this money to Israel? I don't care. Keep it here.
Well, because our government is not ours anymore and they don't care about our interests and they don't care about our people. I wanted to play this little video because there's the, you know, anti-woke side, which is really getting into this, showing their support of Zionism. And when it comes to it, like war, they're like war hawks for this. But let's play this video.
College kids today really seem to hate Jews and support literal Islamic terrorists. It's disgusting. A lot of you are wondering, how could this possibly happen? You think it might have something to do with the decades of left-wing indoctrination that we've just let fester in our schools? Normal people understand that the Israelis getting attacked here, they're the good guys. The jihadis doing the attacking, they're the bad guys. I'm Blake Masters. I'm running for Congress here in Arizona's 8th District. And I approve this message because we're going to defund the schools that teach anti-Jewish, pro-jihadi bullshit.
Where were they with these videos when it's like rampant anti-white CRT that was like, you know, singling out white kids saying you're the devil and you're to blame for everything. And now they're equating, you know, oh, when Israel's hurt, now we have to go into the schools and we have to defund and we have to run on these campaigns. But they're conflating like anti-Jewish when most anti-Zionists on the left are not anti-Jewish. They're anti the state of Israel. But now they're just like merging that together. But it's just so cringe seeing this. Supposedly anti-woke, but they can't see through this agenda and they're supporting war and crushing free speech on this topic.
Right. I also think it's just hilarious that they think this clear ad for Israel is like, this is how I'm going to get elected in America. Show me.
Yeah, what the heck? Like, what country do we live in? You running in Israel or are you running in America?
Exactly.
It's just amazing. It's like he knows what he needs to say to try and get elected, to try and get the money, you know? It's just so disgusting.
Gotta get that money, you know? There's a lot in the pot there, I guess.
And that's all he's running. Like, that's all I've heard this guy say. Like, that's it. Like, what are you going to do for Americans?
Like, other than the fact that, like, where he's running, I don't think he said anything about doing anything for his constituents other than taking the money away from the anti-Israel schools.
Oh, I know. Now they're ready for like remigration, deportations, you know, closing the border. It's like, why can they be that way for our own people? Or how about when, you know, white Americans are attacked? They don't do videos like this. They don't come out and make threats like that. They don't call it bullshit. No, they don't say those who are supporting anti-white bullshit. I've never heard them say that, you know.
Well, you know, like being anti-white at this point is trendy and topical and cool.
Mainstream.
And it's 100% mainstream while they deny just as vehemently, like, oh, there's no attack on white people. There's no agenda to make sure that, you know, there's more brown in America and in the rest of the world than white. That's definitely not a thing, you conspiracy theorist nut job.
They admit it, though.
Get rid of all the white people because they suck.
Right? Yeah, you know? Exactly. And they celebrate, right? Oh, there's less white people here now. This is amazing. This is great. Well, none of these neocon cucks are on our side. They don't stand up for us. I wanted to go to Dan Cringe Shaw, also known as Zioclops. I haven't heard from that guy in a couple of years, but I recently saw he got upset with Patrick Howley, a reporter for National File, of course, who he pressed Cringe on his stance on the war machine. And this guy, of course, is a total war hawk, neocon, Israel first type. And he's just a dick. Yeah. Let's play the video. Because then later he trips one of the guys.
Yeah.
Dan, are you scared that Scalise doesn't have the votes on the floor on the first ballot?
I'm not scared. We'll see.
How many votes, Congressman? 10 votes to get it done? 15?
Cell phones.
National File. Yeah, we're independent citizen folks. We're not on the side of the establishment. Do you think that Ukraine funding will play in this? Because a lot of people don't want to see more money going to Zelensky, who's been accused of being a cocaine abuser, and also stealing American taxpayer money. So do you think that is going to play a role in how Scalise might lose on the first ballot?
There's usually not so many of you little miscreants on this. Like,
the miscreants are taking back this town, my friend.
How do you like the moniker McCain that you got? McCain 2.0.
There's usually 2. Less 0. Of you. Like kind of.
I know. Now
like,
there's more of us. Now there's more of us, Dan. That's how it works, man. Yeah. When you sell
America
out the people,
really hates you,
then there's more people holding you accountable.
Like, everybody hates you.
Well, you know, I think you should get a job, man. Honestly.
That's what, like, that he definitely, like, clearly threatened this trip.
Is that
a job? Yeah.
You're a parasite. You're part of the parasite class.
You're proud of that? It's literally a job.
We have a W-2 and everything.
You're proud of the parasite class.
Yeah.
You guys are doing well.
You like taking taxpayer dollars and injection.
You're not doing a good job walking backwards. You're going to fall.
Yeah. Oh, he's already plotting to trip him, eh?
On record, like the McCain or don't like the McCain.
How many ballots is this going to go for, Dan?
Huh? I don't really care.
You don't care.
All right, you little
why do you love Israel so much?
Dan, you're a warmonger. Why do you give money for the defense industry to keep these wars going, dude? We don't want it anymore. Oh, assault. I just witnessed it. You got that on camera? Dan Crenshaw just did.
You can rewind that part, Henrik, again one more time so we see the trip.
Oh, you can tell. He's like.
Yeah, watch. He sticks his leg out. Look. Yep. Oh, yeah. He was hoping he was going to trip right there on the stairs. Yeah, Zioclops never does well when he's confronted with questions. I remember playing some clips a couple years ago where people would come, and I remember, like, some of the groypers were showing up at a lot of his things and asking questions, and he would get really angry, really upset. Let's pull up. Actually, this was from Patrick Howley. This was back in 2022. America would not be here without Israel. Now, I thought that was a joke at first. That was a joke going around, but he actually said that. How old is Israel? How old is America? I mean, just right there, you know, it's hilarious. What do you think about that?
Well, I mean, the whole incident was hilarious in that, you know, it just proves like who these people are. It proves who people like Dan Crenshaw are. They will go out of their way to and literally assault someone in order to avoid answering questions that they know will make them look bad. And that was the publisher of National File, Noel Fritsch, great guy. Everybody who works at National File works so hard. And, you know, we don't have the budget of these people who are getting paid to stick to the conning script. And we're still like a new place, we're still a new publication relatively compared to a lot of other places, but we break big news. We're not afraid to say these things. We're not afraid to approach these people and ask them the questions that they need to be asked and they need to be held accountable for. And that's just another example of it. It's just like, you know, right there in front of you, this is how they treat citizen journalists. This is how they treat people who will relentlessly fight to get people the truth. They will try to make you eat it on concrete steps. You know, they'll, it's despicable.
And then we had Nikki Haley also, Ron DeSantis, like they're all Israel first. In fact, let's play this little clip of Ron DeSantis. He talked about how Israel is such a special country and Western civilization was birthed in Israel.
Israel is a special country because our entire civilization Western civilization was birthed in the Holy Land. We are based
the
on
Hindu the next to him is like
Christian
what
tradition. You would not have the United States of America if you did not have the existence. But Israel is a special.
We threat. Wouldn't have America if it weren't for Israel. And Western civilization was given to us by Israel. No, Western civilization came from the West. It came from ancient Greeks and Romans. In Rome, they birthed Western civilization, not Israel. And then it's always this Judeo-Christianity. No, two separate interests there. They've been trying to merge the two. But Israel has done nothing to benefit America. Nothing. He's giving credit to this country in the Middle East. That's what, 75 years old, to make his Zionist donors happy. And it's insulting to Europeans, to our culture, our heritage, our ancestors who built Western civilization. Now, I have been to Israel. Israel would be a dump if it weren't for German and European money that they keep getting. What do you think about this comment that he makes?
Yeah. I mean, it's not only historically inaccurate, but it's just bewildering that he would say such a thing. It's like he has the confidence that people will just buy it. You know what I mean? People are just going to hear that and go, oh, that's a great point. You know, like no rational person, no person who understands anything about Western society, Western culture, the roots of Western values would believe that. But he knows that by a large margin, the normies are not very up and, you know, they're not very educated. Let's just say it. Black and white, they're not very educated.
Certainly on European history, too, like the real European history.
As far as they're concerned, you know, yogurt is as cultured as white stuff gets, and that's that. And that's what's scary about it for me more than anything is the confidence in espousing such utter nonsense, because you're confident that nobody, at least not on a grand enough scale, is going to call you out on it.
Yeah. Yeah, well, he got called out on it. And I love how on the bottom of one of those tweets that went around on that, sorry, the X's, there was more context was added to talk about ancient Greece and Rome.
Yeah, community notes has really been a blessing in disguise.
It's been good, huh? Yeah.
I also like the weaponization that's been going on with it, where they'll like post something that's blatantly false just to get the community. That's my favorite. That's the best use of Twitter, whatever, that I've seen in years.
I rate those. Anytime I see good ones, I'm always rating it. Like, yes, very helpful. Good sources, good information. You know. Now, talking about big tech, now Elon's doing a lot of stuff. He's suing Media Matters. I saw the attorney general recently responded on the Media Matters affair and said that they were going to investigate. Where do you think big tech censorship is going? And what do you think about Elon's role in these lawsuits?
Well, quite frankly, I don't think it's going to get better anytime soon, because they have so much money behind them to just keep delaying and, you know, prolonging the process of these open lawsuits that are against them. It not only interferes with just our actual right to free speech, but it is a form of, we've seen how it's an election interference. We've seen how they've deplatformed people for being right wing. We've seen how people have been taken off for wrong thing. And, you know, a lot of them have been reinstated. But the fact of the matter is, a lot of this damage is irreparable and it's not going anywhere anytime soon. I don't think that there's, you know, at least in the next decade, like I said, they could just prolong this. You know, they have the money. They're not hurting for it. Mm-hmm. It's not a problem for them. They have unlimited resources.
Yeah, they'll just keep trying until they get what
they
want.
Have the favor of public opinion, because at least for now, they're saying the things that everybody is kind of told to agree with. And nobody listens to, like, well, you know, if you agree to this level of censorship, you're signing up for your own censorship. You're signing up for to take away your own freedom of speech. And again, people aren't educated enough to understand this. So unfortunately, like, there is a lot of big waves that are made. There have been a lot of, there is a lot more attention on it and the detriment of big tech censorship, but I don't see it getting better anytime soon.
No, and I think ultimately this war that's happening against X is about Elon, because he's kind of waking up to some things. He's liking some exes, and he's responding to some things. And so these advertisers, who are all big lefty owned Rand corporations, they want to pull their ad money out as a way to shut him down, right? Because he is upholding free speech, and they have all their typical lies, extremism, white supremacy, anti-Semitism, all this stuff, especially with like the Israel-Gaza war. Like, people have the right to have an opinion if we're about to go into World War III, but they don't like it. They want total control. They can handle one platform not being controlled by them. It's outrageous. So I think it's good that he's suing them. There's a process of discovery. Maybe some other things will come out. And hopefully, you know, he will survive all these things. Hopefully there's enough good advertisers or a lot of little people that can go out there and support him instead of the Apples and the IBMs. I know, too, alt tech, Rumble and Odyssey this last week were both hit with the DDoS attacks. This was in the last few days. So somebody obviously doesn't like free speech and they want to shut everything down because they can't control it. And the question is, why are you so afraid? Huh? Like, yeah. Truth fears no investigation, right? Well, they know the truth is not on their side, right?
That was actually like my biggest reason for not only becoming political, but understanding that I actually am like fairly right wing, was looking at how information was censored and seeing how people were reacting to me even scratching the surface of understanding these topics, and how immediately it went from some people who I've been friends with over a decade, you know, lifelong friends, immediately, oh, you're just like Anne, you're a Nazi, you're a bigot, and all this other stuff. And this is when I still considered myself relatively left-wing, and I was just kind of saying like, hey, wait a minute, these things don't add up. This doesn't make sense. Why can't we talk about these things? Why can't I talk about, you know, big tech censorship? Why can't I talk about, you know, the attacks on white people? Why can't I say any of these things? And I realized like, oh, this information is hidden for a reason. They don't want me to understand these things. And you know, I'm by no means a genius, but if you are presented with logic, you're gonna
connect the dots.
Connect the dots, exactly. So when you, instead of allowing people to be exposed to these logical, very logical points of view, they're suppressed and they're hidden, and they're told that even if you come near it, don't do that, because that is the beginning down the path of white supremacy.
Yeah, right there. That should be a red flag, because everyone knows these terms are meaningless anymore. Like, they've used that term white supremacist so much. I've been called that so much in the last years. It's just like, now, like, everyone's called that. Trump's been called that. Like, all these people who don't even think about race are called that. So it's meaningless. By the way, speaking of Trump, I saw he's suing media companies for defamation too. So he's jumping on that. 20 media companies. Yeah, they're all listed right there. So we'll see. I mean, are the courts rigged? Yes, but sometimes you get lucky. Let's hope that they can get somewhere with it. I did want to talk about two political prisoners, because it's so insane right now. And America is not land of the free. It's not. You know, you say things they don't like, you can be put away as a political prisoner, you know, solitary confinement, or you could be debanked, lose access to certain services. Like, this is happening in this country. Now, you had was it on Wrong Speak Publishing, I think? Yeah, you did a little report there on new concerns over mistreatment of J6 prisoner Joe Biggs. And it's awful what's happening to these guys. So, yeah, so what's the latest? I didn't actually get to read the whole article.
So, essentially, during his transfer, he was subjected to box cuffing for upwards of 16 hours. It's not meant to be a long-term form of restraint. And he's, you know, not like old, but he's older and he's, you know, a veteran. He's got a lot of, you know, knee problems, back problems, whatever. And this was extremely agonizing for him. And then when the 15 people who were being transferred finally arrived, they were told that they had no accommodations for them, no blankets, no pillows, no beds. So they had to sleep with the lights on the concrete floor. And he had one slice of pizza as sustenance over like a 2-day period. You know, it's just, it's despicable how they're treating I mean, prisoners, prison reform is a major deal, but they're torturing these January 6th political prisoners. These are largely people who have never had a single criminal prosecution in their entire lives and now are being labeled as domestic terrorists. I was with Joe Biggs the day before and the morning of. And You know, I say this in jest, and it's kind of like a dark thing to say, especially since so many of them are being tortured right now. But like, these guys, they were a drinking club. Like, they can't.
Yeah, organize. Boys club, just hanging
they
out.
They can't shit. Organize yeah. a bar crawl, much less an overthrow of the government.
No, the people who say that know that that's not true. It's guys yeah. who are like hanging outside. Well, they're protesting. Even the people went inside. They took some selfies. Like, come on, they're going to take over the government.
There's further reasoning to believe that this is a setup when you see how they treat the Proud Boys for the years leading up to this. They constantly are talking about them as if they're some sort of domestic terrorist organization, when really the only reason they existed in the first place was because conservatives were being attacked at free speech rallies and the police were not intervening. That's so right. These boys, basically, who were just a drinking club, said, all right, we'll stand guard and we'll make sure that these people don't get hurt. And that birthed this like whole movement. And the idea that they're anything other than that is complete lunacy. These guys are, Joe Biggs is a great, not only a very nice person, a very good friend, but he is an amazing father, and his daughter is going without because of some nonsense. You know, he's there for essentially shaking a fence and walking inside. I don't actually know if Joe ever got into the building or if
I don't think he did. I don't think he didn't even step foot in. And would he get 30? Was it 30 years or 20?
Oh, 17 years.
17 years.
The highest charge right now, I believe, is Enrique Tarrio, 22 years, and he wasn't even in D.C. when it happened.
It's mind blowing.
Supremacist. You know,
yeah, of course,
the leader of this white supremacist.
Well, they can be white supremacists now. I saw the articles.
White supremacy must be the most racially inclusive supremacist racial group I've ever heard of, because you could be any race and be a white supremacist.
Yeah, I know. It's funny. Well, that is there we go. White supremacy with the you can't make it up. CNN. You know, it's just like, can't even tell what's real when it's a joke anymore. It's so absurd. But people are sitting in jail cells in solitary confinement,
Joe
being tortured.
Alone, he did like, I believe, over a year in solitary. That's torture.
It messes that's with you. Yes.
They don't even put murderers in solitary for that long. Okay. And he didn't even step foot in the Capitol. This is a man who has two Purple Hearts. He is a veteran. His military benefits have been suspended. His daughter is being raised without her father. And it is an injustice.
I didn't get to comb through it yet, but Henrik was saying there's new footage out about J6 as well.
Yeah. Well, even that's just a distraction, because at this point, not only do we understand that the feds were involved in the planning and the execution of this fedsurrection, but we also know that there still hasn't been a single charge for insurrection. So what are these people still doing in prison? Why were they being held pre-trial? These people need to be home. They need to be with their families. And this all needs to, forget the footage. I don't care about the footage anymore. Release the prisoners.
Yeah, exactly. And maybe someone will come into office. I don't know. If Trump wins, would he pardon these people? I don't know.
You know, I'd really like to believe he would keep true to that word. He was very, there is a lot of reason to be critical of Trump. There's a lot of reason to feel betrayed by Trump. Operation Warp Speed, he didn't care about the wall. He ran on the wall and he totally abandoned that. But the fact of the matter is, he has been the most vocal about saying that if and hopefully when he is elected, if you believe in a fair election at all, that he would pardon these people who have wrongly had their lives ruined. And I mean, you know, suicides are happening more often. These poor kids, people talk about the families. And of course there's the Patriot Mail Project is doing a Christmas fundraiser. So if you, you guys should know about that. They donate money to families of J6ers so that their kids can still have Christmas presents and, food. The kids are suffering really badly. A lot of these kids had to watch their families be dragged away from them. A lot of kids are constantly bombarded with propaganda about how their family are terrorists, and they have to relive that trauma every single day, and they don't get their family. Like, I know there was one of the five Proud Boys, like, his wife has given birth since he's been away, and he still hasn't held his child.
Oh, that's,
like,
awful.
I'm trying not to cry even thinking about it. It breaks my heart, because, like I said, I was with these guys the day before and the day of, and literally the only planning that they did was how to get my friend and I out of there. We were pregnant at the time, if something were to go wrong. And this horrible group of domestic terrorists had a circle where we prayed, and we prayed for our safety, and we prayed for our country. And then we went and we listened to Trump, because that's what we were there to do. Nobody knew about going to the Capitol. Nobody had any plans to do anything insane, but here they are sitting in federal prison. And, you know, being coerced into taking guilty verdicts so that they don't face extraordinary amounts of time. And you have all these people who fundamentally their fight for the last decade has been prison reform. The justice system isn't fair. Now suddenly the justice system is fair. Now suddenly, overnight, suddenly there's no way that, because these right wingers are being prosecuted, that could be done in an unfair way. There's no way that in a city that's 95% Democrat, they're having a jury of their peers. That's non-existent in Washington, D.C. for these people.
Well, when they can start to, you know, hauling off right wingers and torturing them in solitary confinement, now the justice system works, right? When you can haul people off for a meme or saying something online, now it's great.
Yes. No, now the justice system is fixed. There's no problem. And, like, you do actually see small pockets of BLM joining up with the J6ers saying, oh, like, maybe this is a real thing. Maybe the police did, you know, trick us. Maybe we were, you know, fed a false narrative. Maybe they did start it, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Well, what do you think about, thinking of everything we've been talking about, what do you think the future trends for U.S. politics are? Yeah. Black pilled, white pilled. Like, where do you think this is going?
Look, at the end of the day, I truly am a woman of faith. I struggle with that. I'm still learning. I'm not perfect. There's a lot of ways I still, fall short. But I do have faith. I do pray for the future of this country, and I believe that there's a lot of other people who have been woken up in a severe way by what they've seen other people go through and what they've had to go through themselves. And I do think that that has mobilized people in a way that I haven't seen in a lot of my life. So I do think that there is more of more young people are trending conservative than I've ever seen before. People are, you know, saving their virginity. People are, turning against degenerate culture. People are turning against these force-fed propaganda of the left wing. And I am cautiously optimistic. But having said that, there needs to be action followed behind the intention. So I feel like more people are awake to what's going on. I feel as if more people are fed up with being fed only one story, and that only story being the only thing that's acceptable. And there is pushback towards it. But as far as American politics, I don't even necessarily know if I believe in the integrity of the elections. I don't know what a political solution would look like. And maybe that's because I'm not educated on the subject. Maybe it's because there's something that I'm missing, or
it's something that doesn't exist yet. It has to be completely new.
Exactly. And, you know, I definitely don't think that I'm the person to be one of those voices. But what I can do in the meantime is try to wake up younger women as to the path that they're choosing to go down. I can share my story and help people understand, you know, where the switch was, because maybe, just maybe, somebody can identify with that and learn before it's too late for them. Because as Charles Bukowski said, there's nothing worse than too late.
Nope. But better late than never, though.
I know.
I know.
Especially for us women.
Yeah. But no. Yeah. There's a clock that's ticking there for sure.
You don't want to wake up a 40-year-old and suddenly realize, like, oh, maybe I should have cared and gotten into a relationship and gotten married. And
yeah, that's tragic. I've seen that happen.
It's unfortunate. It really is. And I've seen it happen to a lot of my friends, where, like, they're, like, panicking now and kind of settling almost. And, you know, dating scene's already tragic.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, I couldn't imagine. So hard. Well, what do you think? Last question. I have my thoughts on this too, but the best activism we can all do. I mean, for me, I think it's rebelling against everything that's progressive, you know, and being the opposition to that and really putting, you know, a lot of time and effort into developing your own family, developing yourself, you know, strengthening your community, your family, your friends, your outreach, you know, being a light basically in this darkness and shining the light of truth on a lot of these things and saying no whenever it comes your way. I think if we all did that, we'd probably be in a better place instead of being so tolerant all the time.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, like you said, I would piggyback off of it. It starts small. It starts with your own house and then your own neighborhood and your, you know, own community. And it builds from there. You know, there's a lot about Jordan Peterson I don't like, but the fundamental of like making your bed, it really does start with something as fundamental as that. If you can't manage to keep the world around you in order, you're not going to be able to help those outside. And just like starting with your family, starting with your church, starting with your local community, addressing the problems that are happening there, because once you do that, you can expand and then expand. And that becomes bigger and bigger initiatives. And that is really the only thing that's going to protect the future of America and Americans, is rediscovering that sense of community and rediscovering the purpose of the family unit.
I totally agree. Absolutely. It all starts in your own house and in your own life. And we all have to do everything that's in our immediate power to do. And if we all did that, I think it will look like a completely different world, different place. Now, tell us what you have going on. I know you have some other projects and things.
Oh, yeah. So I'm always working at National File, always helping the team over there. I'm currently writing for Wrong Speak Publishing. I'm a producer for the campaign show with Patrick Cowley that airs every single morning, weekday morning. And last but not least, my big project that I'm working on, and I don't know how you feel about it personally, but I am organizing a Dungeons and Dragons campaign.
Nice.
For online right-wing influencers. Right now, I have this whole world laid out, and we're going to basically, we have Ramsey Paul is going to be one of our main campaign guys. We have a couple like Tradwife influencer types, right-wing commentators, and we're going to have guest play NPC characters. But I want to find some like wholesome content to produce. And I just, I know that like that space is kind of taken over by lefties and really cringe woke stuff. So I'm going to have an incredibly based campaign. We're going to have like traditional Dungeons and Dragons. It's going to be a lot of fun. But yeah. Following the campaign show, follow me. I make a lot of commentary videos at Coulter Culture. You know, I funnel it under the channel. Also, Don't At Me, for which I would love to bring you on at some point. Okay. And maybe on the campaign show if you would be interested. We would love to have you guys.
Yeah, of course. Sounds good. Well, thank you so much. It's been nice to hear your opinion and to share everything that you're doing. And we'll have to do it again sometime. Thank you, Kim.
Oh, I'll come back anytime. Thank you so much.
They're good folks over at National File. Go check them out. Sounds basic and kind of cheesy, but it's true. Change all starts in the home first, and it ripples through the nation. That's why progressives are warring so hard against the family unit. It's at the core of what influences our society. We are easy to find. Simply go to Red Ice TV to find all our links, and you can greatly help us by becoming a member or a producer. Simply head over to redicemembers.com. But you can also go to Subscribestar, Odyssey, or Locals. A special thanks to our executive producers, T. Lothrop Stoddard, V. Miller, Resin Revolts, Good Luck Lap, Jake, Red Pill Rundown, French 47, Mark Smith, No One Jeebs, President Obunga, Mongoose, William Fox, Angry White Soccer Mom, The Second Wanderer, Operation Werewolf, The Ride Never Ends, Francis Parker Yaki, Dill Bob, Last Place Simp, Joseph Hart, Purple Haze, Colin Marriott, Commie Combo Deal, The Dearborn Toxic Events, Brendan Anthony, and 55 Club Books. And a special thanks to our producers, Mr. Walker 696, Johansson, Leroy DeMond, Snarkpup, Eyes Open, Mr. Lemry, Yuri New, Obadiah Hakeswill, Perfect Brute, Single Action Army, HP Lovecraft, Dixie Drone Force, and 55clubbooks.com. Love you all. Never give up. Stay positive. See you next time.